Welcome to The Market, sponsored by the CME Group. Dateline, Friday, May 18, Chicago. Along with Max Armstrong, Orion Samuelson with you for our weekly get-together to look at markets from Wall Street to the wheat fields of Kansas. And as always, more to talk about than the time to talk about it. But let's start with today's performance on Wall Street, and then we'll take it from there. The S&P 500 ended lower today after a choppy trading session as bank and chipmaker stocks weighed on the index and investors still grappling with the progress or the lack of with the U.S.-China trade talks. All three major U.S. stock indices posted a weekly loss as the markets reacted to reports from the U.S.-China trade summit, rising government bond yields, and increasing oil prices. One market strategist in New York said, "I think everybody is waiting on some sort of direction on American trade talks that are occurring right now, and there's anxiety about oil prices." China today denied accounts by some U.S. officials that it had offered a package to slash the U.S. trade deficit by up to $200 billion. But it did say the consultations were constructive in the latest salvo of the tit-for-tat messages to emerge from that high-level meeting in Washington. Another analyst said markets tend to get over that sort of thing very quickly lately. You may have a statement that impacts sentiment and movements over a half hour or so, but then it reverses back because there's so much confusion out there right now. Boeing company shares traded higher today on hope for a reduction in the U.S.-China trade deficit after an American source said the company would be major beneficiary of a narrowed trade gap. Boeing sells about a fourth of its commercial aircraft to Chinese customers, and the plane maker's shares advanced 2%, and that helped keep the Dow out of negative territory. But relatively tariff-immune small-cap stocks continued to outperform, with the Russell 2000 hitting its third straight record-closing high. Yields of the 10-year treasuries pulled back from near 7-year highs as buyers emerged after a bond sell-off earlier in the week, prompted by growing inflation worries. And although banks typically benefit from higher interest rates, shares of J.P. Morgan Chase, Citigroup, Bank of America, and Wells Fargo were all lower, pulling the S&P Financial Index down nearly 1%. And some investors have expressed skepticism that the banking sector has much more room to rise unless loan growth accelerates or regulations slacken considerably. So the Dow Jones Industrial Average essentially flat, ending the session at 24,715. The S&P lost 7 points and ended at 2,712, and the NASDAQ composite today dropped 28 points to end the week at 73.54. And taking a look at the weekly changes on Wall Street for the week, the S&P down about 0.5%, the Dow also down about 0.5%, and the NASDAQ down about 2%. And a couple of other notes today. Deere & Company helped bolster the industrial sector. Their stock up 5.7% after the company raised its full-year earnings estimate. Came as a surprise to some people in the agricultural community. Oh, and then there's Campbell Soup, down 12%. After its chief executive officer abruptly stepped down and the company cut its full-year profit forecast, saying that it expects higher costs to weigh on margins. So that's pretty much what we looked at in today's trade, the final trading day of the week. So now let's look ahead to next week and see what we're going to be checking about and disagreeing about. And the one thing that I find fascinating on all of these trade war discussions that there are so many people on both sides of that issue, and they don't seem to be able to come to a conclusion that would help settle the market. So next week on Wednesday, retailer Target Corporation expected to post an increase in first quarter sales and profit driven by increased consumer spending in the backdrop of a strong U.S. economy with low unemployment rates and lower taxes. Target has been investing heavily to improve its store and online operations by focusing on its own brands. On Tuesday, Hewlett-Packard Enterprise Company expected to report a decline in second quarter revenue as the company is moving away from its mainstay servers business and is focusing more on the enterprise market. On the economic calendar next week, new home sales numbers for April are due on Wednesday. New home sales increased 4% to an adjusted annual rate of 694,000 in March. Initial jobless claims figures for the week ended May 19th are due on Thursday, along with existing home sales data for April. And then on Friday, we'll get the durable goods numbers for April. On Tuesday, department store operator Kohl's Corporation expected to report an increase in same-store sales and a growth in revenue, benefiting from a number of strategies it has made to tackle falling store traffic. The company, along with its peers, joined rivals in closing some locations, shrunk the size of many more, and also has been spending on technology and in-store investments. And as usual, this time of the year, on Wednesday, Federal Reserve Bank governors will be on the road and on the speaker's podium. Nearly all of the governors will be traveling to various business sessions and meetings next week. And so if you try to call them in the office, you may not be able to get them. Apparel retailer Urban Outfitters expected to post a rise in first quarter sales and profit on Tuesday, driven by strong sales at its namesake brand. Urban Outfitters has been successful in coming out of a sales slump by diversifying across brands. The company has outlined plans to build large stores to draw customers by improving the shopping experience, and investors will look for comment on store traffic and a forecast for the second quarter. Also on Thursday, apparel retailer Gap is expected to again bank on its cheaper Old Navy brand to drive revenue and comparable store sales growth in the first quarter. And we know about the challenges facing the retail apparel industry. Toll Brothers, that's the luxury home builder, expected to report an increase in second quarter revenue on Tuesday, thanks to economic growth that continues to fuel demand for housing in the U.S. However, as mortgage rates tick up, making borrowing a little dearer for home buyers, and labor and raw material costs continue to escalate for home builders, there have been concerns about a slowdown in the housing industry. Home improvement chain Lowe's Company is expected to post an increase in first quarter revenue and comparable store sales on Wednesday, benefiting from the optimism surrounding the U.S. home building market. However, like its bigger rival Home Depot, Lowe's is expected to see a sales impact from the unusually cold weather as households either refrain from venturing out or delayed buying spring products. Tiffany & Company, the upscale jeweler, expected to post an increase in first quarter sales on Wednesday as its efforts to adapt the business to include cheaper silver jewelry to price-conscious millennials paid off. Under a new CEO, Tiffany has said it would invest more in the business to sustain its newfound growth. And luxury apparel maker Ralph Lauren Corporation expected to report an increase in fourth quarter profit on Wednesday. Medtronic expected to report a higher fourth quarter profit on Thursday. So that's a look at some of the earnings reports we're going to be watching carefully next week, along with the economic reports from the governor. And then, of course, impacting the economy, the price of oil. Oil prices fell today, but Brent crude marked its sixth straight week of gains, boosted by plummeting Venezuelan production, strong global demand, and looming U.S. sanctions on Iran. Brent crude futures down 79 cents a barrel today. It settled at $78.51. And U.S. crude down 21 cents to settle at $71.28 a barrel. Well, we're going to go from Wall Street now to the agricultural commodity group, because it too is impacted by all of the international trade talk and tariffs. And we have a gentleman with us today who I think does farming in North Dakota and Northern Illinois and heads up the Gulkey Group here in the Chicago area. We caught up with him. Max Armstrong sat down with him in the studio, and we'll share that conversation when we continue here on The Markets.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
Jerry Gulkey, president of Gulkey Group, joining us in the studio this weekend with plenty to talk about. First yes. of all, planting. You've been in the midst of it. Soybean planting on your farm in northern Illinois. How are you getting along?
Should be done tomorrow. I'm counting on it at least because I haven't got on my motorcycle yet. And it's too nice a day to be not on a motorcycle and be planting. But that should be done. And I would say a lot of corn's up. Illinois is, of course, the statistics showed it far ahead of other states. And major states, and doing well. Corn is in the shooting the fourth leaf, at least in northern Illinois, which is, you know, it's been a while since we haven't had a delay for a week. You know, like the last 3 years have been too wet, and this year you could already see the tractor for dust until we got rain. So it's looking good. It's hard to be negative on the crop when everything's, you know, no resistance coming out of the ground at all.
Crop bulletin in Indiana last week was impressive. They made the best progress of all, all of the major corn states.
Yeah, we can do a lot in a short amount of time, and of course we have the incentive now to work maybe longer hours than we did before, or we hire people to do that. So a lot of 24-hour guys were working day in and day out to catch up, and you can do that pretty quickly.
So. Well, now let me ask you about Minnesota and the Dakotas. There was a lot of ground to cover as this week started.
Yeah, northern Iowa and southern Minnesota, the two counties in southern Minnesota and northern Iowa, except for extreme northeastern Iowa, we're in trouble. We have clients out there. 10,000-acre farmers had 800 acres in and said they had somebody 2 weeks before they get in. I would suspect, given the price of soybeans, you know, way back when, I didn't want to plant corn after the 15th of April, May, and now they plant it until June 1st. But a lot of them will tell me, well, we got as good a yield as we got planting on June 1st. However, nobody talks about what it cost me to dry it. And one individual told me it cost me $50 an acre more to dry that 200 bushel corn that I planted in June. He said, an end result was it was not what it was cracked up to be. I don't want any more of it. I got it in my bin. I'm not going to plant as much. So I think we see less corn in that area. And that, if you look at that corridor, that's one of the largest producing areas in the country, along with, you know, central Illinois and so forth. That's not a small item. So you're taking away you're taking away high APH corn that may go to beans.
Have you guys at Gunky Group quantified that yet, what you think it might be in terms of conversion?
Yeah, we did that and pretty much publicly now, but our corn is pretty much right on. I wouldn't be surprised. We were at 88.5, I think, so we were actually a little bit above what USDA was. Soybeans, we were a lot higher. We were like 92.2. So my suspicion is that NASS is not doing, and I thought I'd never say that, but I think they're doing a not as good a job, because mainly not to their fault, perhaps, but they admittedly, and we had a person, a regional manager, speak to us in Chicago, and he said they're having a very difficult time getting people to fill out the surveys. So if you think of yourself as a large farmer, and we have more acres under less operations, do I really have time to do that? And I don't do it, and I don't farm anywhere near what some people do. And so, and the attitude is, why would I want to tell you what I'm doing when you may use it against me and you massage it anyway? So I think what happens is that if you don't get the information from someone, you'll say, well, what would have he said had he been, and what's his tendency been? Well, he's a corn on corn guy. So I wouldn't be a bit surprised that if there's a shock, that we have a lot more beans planted and less corn.
We've always heard farmers complaining about USDA reports,
yeah.
And we heard complaints about the WASDE report a few days ago, the
yeah.
World Ag Outlook Board, yeah. The job they do. Now I hear farmer Jerry Gokey complaining about the reports.
I think it's an age thing, you know. My dad complained about it, too, and I didn't think much of his attitude until he was proven right later on. But yeah, the NASS report had some surprises, but you have to dig a little bit deeper into that NASS report to what they really said. And a lot of people have not done that. They thought it was bullish. We had a negative response. If you look at soybeans, they raised the soybean exports significantly. Still, we have over 400 and some million bushels left over without an increase in acres from where the 89 that they used and a normal yield, I think they're 48.5 or 49. That told me that, Jerry, this is the best that you're going to get. I doubt exports get any bigger. And they went right along with the rest of the folks out there, I think, that are extrapolating what China has done the last few years and moving forward and saying maybe 97 this year or 100 million metric tons and 108 the year after, and we're going to get the bulk of that. They still are in the belief, I believe, that China's up against the wall and they got to come to us eventually. And that hasn't proven very well yet. I hope it's true, but I'm suspect. I'm very suspect of it.
You're the contrarian here. I mean, most everybody, the herd is going down through there saying, wait a minute. You know, yeah, sure, they'll buy first from somebody else, but
yeah.
Eventually they've got to come to the United States. You're not of that opinion.
Well, yeah, and I've met with Chinese. I know how they work, and you don't put their back up against the wall, and they don't allow themselves to get their back up against the wall without an alternative. There are a lot more alternative meals out there, cottonseed meal, rapeseed meal, palm kernel meal, and all that they can substitute for it. And if you look at and they already admitted they're going to plant more beans next year. I don't think they want to be held hostage to us. So if they could reduce 5%, you know, you ask any farmer, he could probably reduce 5% of his soy meal usage and not affect things a whole lot, especially if you have an agenda. So if you reduce their usage by 5%, that's 5 million metric tons. Who's going to hold that excess in a market that is bent on thinking that, well, this is just going to go away and they'll be back again? I don't think they'd come back that soon. Right now, they're not buying Kernel 1 from us. I talked to people in Europe and all over. They've got a mandate out there. You do not buy it from the U.S. Now, Argentina's been buying grain from us, the biggest purchase in a long time. It tells me that they want to buy the beans, bring them in. They'll value add and sell the meal because they don't want to lose their meal customer. But if China, and I see some of the crack in the cement and in the dike of a lot of some commercials, big guys, suggesting maybe we're a little bit too exuberant on Chinese demand. So time is running out. We got to do something this week with some kind of agreement with China, or we'll be in the next year. I've grown a crop and trying to get rid of it before they settle this thing.
When will that realization settle into the market? When will, if in fact you are correct,
yeah.
When will that hit the market and then we see an immediate reaction of disappointment?
Well, we saw some disappointment this morning, probably on Thursday morning on the exports again. Not real great. We need to bring them back. If you're gonna be right about this, we better see the non-Chinese people come in and buy. We're not seeing it. exports normally tail off at this time. I think we're in the process of doing that, but more people are looking at the trade talks this week with China. And I'm kind of optimistic in that result as far as, you know, the common sense approach.
Right.
I look at it and say, you know, what would Jerry do if he were president? And this is not rocket scientists how to negotiate. We do it all the time in land. You know how it is. Everybody leaves the table happy. So they want $200 billion dollars less, the United States does. I've heard that China's made overtures of something less than that. Somewhere in the middle lies truth, and Trump's got to get something done pretty quickly. And I think the underlying thing in this whole deal that most people don't talk about much, and that's what Trump has already said, I want reciprocal agreement, I want a level playing field. And implied in that to me is that I don't want to buy less of your stuff. I want you to buy more of ours. Mm-hmm. And what would they want to buy of ours? They have clean air they need. They need E15 blended fuel. That makes Harold Hamm happy as a lark. He can sell crude oil now blended. And that makes a lot of these other guys feel good. They got $70 oil. Now, if they can sell gasoline or ethanol directly, that would be good. And I think there's a lot of DDGs. There's a lot of things China could do to say, we'll buy more of some of these things and they don't hurt their supplier in South America. So I think there's a lot of things that can be done. But and if there's a surprise to me, it would be that we come away from this by Monday morning with something positive that comes out of this, that a number that we agree upon. Maybe we agree upon $175 billion instead of $200 billion. Then everybody wins a little something. You know how it works. It's, you know, you don't you want to walk away from that table feeling like you won, and you don't want to make a fool out of the other guy. And that's difficult for Trump to do sometimes, but he knows the art of the deal. He knows how to do it. And so do we as farmers, you know.
How friendly are you to the corn market at the moment?
Very friendly a long time ago, as you know, probably last fall.
Right.
And we're there. You can't argue the numbers. And
are you still as bullish as you were?
Yeah, I think there's an opportunity for 450 corn for December, given a little weather market. If not, and we don't produce 176 bushels an acre, even with that extra million acres that Informa thinks that we have out there, didn't affect the market. And that's only 180 million bushels. We can't really guess that close. So that still presents a problem for carryover. And, you know, there's people out there now, finally, that were wanting to sell every 10-cent rally. Now they're saying we're going to have a 1.3 billion bushel carryover. It bothers me when everybody agrees with me, when we've done our due diligence, you know, and 6 months later.
Something's wrong,
yeah. Yeah, I'm not a contrarian per se. But if we're all agree to that, then that tells us there's some support under here. And there's nothing wrong with 75% of us thinking one way, but if 100% are right, who's left to buy it anymore? You got to get some reason to pull it back. And we may have had that in these kind of markets. You know, a nickel is a lot if you think it's going up another 40 cents.
We're out of time. Thanks for yours,
you
sir. Good to
you
see
bet.
You.
Yep.
Jerry
Gokey,
Gokey Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
First of all, a big event in the agricultural legislation today when the farm bill failed in the House, and the next steps apparently unclear. That sweeping $867 billion farm bill didn't make it in the House this afternoon after conservative Republicans warned party leaders not to hold the vote until they were given the chance to consider a bill to clamp down on immigration. And so the next steps are unclear for the bill, incidentally, which failed in a 198-213 vote. Democrats opposed the legislation due to changes it would make to a food stamp program, the SNAP program, which is used by about 40 million Americans, officially known as the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. Members of the Senate Committee on Agriculture have said they are writing their own version of the Farm Bill because the House's proposed SNAP changes would not pass the chamber, where Republicans hold a slim 51-49 majority, and passing most legislation requires 60 votes. And, of course, the Food Nutrition Bill, the SNAP program in the House Farm Bill, said we want proof that people are able to work and should be looking for a job, maybe, to take them off the SNAP programs. The committee chairman of the House Agriculture Committee, Michael Conaway, a Texas Republican, said this very briefly. We experienced a setback today after a streak of victories all week. We may be down, but we are not out. We will deliver a strong new farm bill on time, as the president has called on us to do. Our nation's farmers and ranchers and rural America deserves nothing less. And about every other farm organization chimed in. I saw statements from the U.S. Grains Council, statements from the Illinois Farm Bureau, statements from the National Council of Farmer Cooperatives, all expressing disappointment that we didn't get the bill through the House. So I guess we'll wait to see, and will it happen next week? Not sure, but I'm sure they'll go back to work on it and see if they can get it done. There is another interesting story on a subject that comes up once in a while, but I want to share this with you. The headline on Reuters, Pasteurization Without Representation. A Kentucky lawmaker wants to boost raw milk. Enough of this pasteurization without representation, protested Congressman Thomas Massey. The Kentucky Republican wants to make it easier for small-scale farmers to sell raw milk. And his outrage spilled onto the House floor. Massey, who has also tried to make it easier for small-scale farmers to sell beef, pork, and lamb, got a chance today to change federal law that he considers too oppressive when it comes to what Americans eat and drink. Massey conceded he knew big milk, there's a new term, big milk was opposed. He said the lactose lobby has, he charged, is very intolerant of freedom. The dairy industry hailed the defeat of the plan, saying it would have led to increased risk in foodborne illnesses. The federal government considers raw milk a threat to public health and only gives approval to the processed variety. The National Milk Producers Federation and the International Dairy Foods Association, in a letter to House Speaker Paul Ryan and Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi, had bashed Massey's provision as an unnecessary risk to consumer safety and public health. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration has mandated pasteurization of all milk products since 1987 and prevents the sale or transport of unpasteurized milk between states. Just my personal comment on this, Congressman, be careful what you ask for, because I'm very much aware of an incident in Wisconsin where raw milk served to a high school football team caused illness in all of the team members. Be careful what you ask for. So where are we going to start the trade on Monday? Well, let's see where we begin. The grain market page, totally green. The livestock futures page, totally red. So livestock futures, July hogs, Monday will start at $77.25 a hundredweight, dropping 67 cents today. June live cattle will start the week at $102.40 after dropping half a dollar today. And May feeder cattle will start the week at $132.32 after dropping 77 cents a hundredweight today. But in the grain market, a little different story. The July wheat contract will start next week at 518 and a quarter after gaining 20 and three quarters cents today. July corn up 6.5 cents for the day. It'll start Monday at 402.5. And soybeans, the July contract gained 2.75 cents today, and they'll start trading Monday at 998.5. Well, along with Max Armstrong, I say thank you to all of you and to the folks at CME Group for making our weekly get-together possible. Thank you for joining us on The Markets, sponsored by the CME Group.